Hello and welcome. This is Shirley Mears on 1640 AM and so glad to be visiting with Lori Tanzi Martins. And Lori is president of the International Business Ethics Institute. And many of our listeners will be very aware of the opportunity to get to hear her at OK Ethics Luncheon on February 13th at 11:30 at the Petroleum Club. And you can go to okethics.org to learn more about that. But Lori, you're coming to Oklahoma City February 13th, and we are so eager to meet you.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. I have only been in Oklahoma City one time, and that was many, many years ago. So I look forward to making a return visit.
We have lots of changes in downtown Oklahoma City. And, of course, the Petroleum Club is right there downtown on the 34th floor. And we have probably 300-400 people coming to see you.
That's fantastic. I'm really excited.
Well, Lori, let's talk about your work as a leading authority on international business ethics. I bet it's been challenging to help people understand opinions, and the American opinion might be very different than some people's from over the seas. Let's talk about your work.
Right. And you, Shirley, you've touched on one of the things that I think is most important when we think about business ethics in an international context, and that is the role that culture plays. I think those of us from the United States, we get very used to dealing with people who share our fundamental cultural values, who are coming from the same heritage and background. And suddenly then in the business world, we find ourselves operating in parts of the world where much of what we take for mm-hmm. granted is viewed very, very differently. Mm-hmm. And that can have a fundamental impact on how business operates. And it can also lead to unintended consequences. I'll give you a really quick example. Most of us from Western cultures put a great deal of emphasis on, quote, rule of law. We rely on contracts, for example, to define our relationships in the business sense. We're going to have a joint venture. If we're going to enter into a customer relationship or a supplier relationship, those of us from the West, and particularly those of us from the United States, we've got our contracts ready, and they're going to try to anticipate virtually every possible conceivable event that could happen during the course of the relationship and define what the appropriate conduct is. But I'll tell you, in parts of Asia, it's viewed very differently. Contracts are not seen as a governing document for the relationship.
Really?
They're seen as a guideline, general parameters. And what's most important is the relationship itself. It's what is going to work best for the customer-client relationship, what's going to work best from a provider relationship or a joint venture partner relationship. So they don't get so caught up in what's actually written on the page. And that can lead to a lot of conflicts because
wouldn't you think that if it's written on a contract, everybody's already agreed to what they're looking at? It's like, okay, we are on the same page because we've written it out. And if it's signed and dated, I would think that sounds like a contract, not just a list of suggestions.
And that's where the cultural differences come in, because that is very much how we would view it in the West. But if you're coming from a background which, say, is embedded in Confucianism, for example, as much of Asia is, there what is predominantly important is the relationship itself. So a contract is only a means to an end, and anything that they might determine later is in the interest of the relationship, even if it is against what's written in the contract.
Wow.
Well, that's less important to them. That's only a means to an end. It is not the end in itself.
And so most Americans, if they're not aware of what that means, this is a huge aspect to how they could possibly work with people of a different culture.
That's exactly right. And that's where conflicts arise, because the Americans will then, after the negotiation phase, they've got the signed contract, mm-hmm. they get on the airplane, they go home, they think everything's settled. And suddenly, things transpire very differently, and they wonder what happened.
Wow.
So understanding that aspect is just one example of how cultural differences and trying to place yourself, trying to take yourself out of your own cultural context and look at it through the eyes of very different cultures is critical to building successful international business relationships.
And that's where your work comes in.
Correct. And that's what we try to do.
Now, what's the best way for our listeners to learn about you?
Well, we have a website, which is www.business-ethics.org, and that gives a tremendous amount of information on our organization, the International Business Ethics Institute, and we also have a mailing list there that if anyone wants to sign up for, they can receive periodic updates on the Institute's activities.
And then because you're coming and doing a presentation to the OK Ethics organization, I want to tell our listeners that it's so easy to learn about how to get connected, involved with that. You just go to okethics.org or you can call 858-2233. That, of course, is area code 405. Shannon Warren is our contact there. She is the founder of OK Ethics and got an opportunity to learn about Ms. Lori Tanzen Martins. And because Lori has this big background in international business ethics, and she's been recognized as a contemporary American opinion leader, it gives American businesses some advantages. And what would that look like, Lori? How would that look?
You know, one of the big things we tell companies when they are operating overseas is that they need to look at the spirit of what their standards are trying to achieve, perhaps not the actual specific activities. And let me give you an example of that. Most American companies, for example, will have codes of conduct that say very emphatically, no cash gifts because of concerns about bribery overseas the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, that there's a very strict prohibition by most companies on no cash gifts at any time under any circumstances. But here's where some cultural nuances come in. And sometimes when I try to sensitize companies to looking at things from a different cultural context, I say, well, what about tips? Do you tip wait staff at restaurants? Do you allow that as part of your company code? Do you tip bellhops? Do you give cash to the taxi driver who takes you to the airport, you know, a gratuity to, to him or her? And they say, well, of course we do, because that's a tip. And I said, actually, one could argue if you're coming from a different context, that seems a lot like a cash gift.
Right.
So when you're dealing in Asia and you have a cultural tradition in many parts of Asia of what's known as red envelopes at the Chinese New Year, which is a major cultural event throughout much of Asia, and it's very commonplace for business partners, for customers, for suppliers to exchange small amounts of cash, and we are talking small, probably less than U.S. $10, in red envelopes as a sign of respect and goodwill to one another. So if a company goes over there and says, oh, well, this is a cash gift, we can't allow it, that causes problems in the culture because you're not honoring that cultural tradition. And I say, maybe instead of looking at that as a cash gift, you can look at that as a more of a gratuity or a tip, which you do allow under your own company standards. And allowing that flexibility can be important because you're honoring a cultural tradition, but at the same time, by putting a limit on the amount to keep it very small, you're not running the risk of violating what is probably a very important company principle, which is not to engage in bribery or kickback.
Right, because it's so difficult to distinguish between a bribe and a gift in some cases, and if you bring in different kinds of attorneys, it would sway one way or the other.
Correct. And many times attorneys who are not familiar with operating overseas, American attorneys, will get very, very nervous with that. And we have to try to educate them. You have to look at the spirit, not necessarily the letter. As long as these are small amounts, again, I don't believe the Justice Department has ever brought a case against somebody for $10.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
There is a standard there. That's not typically what gets companies in trouble. And again, that's part of the sensitization process that companies need to undergo when they start looking to do a significant amount of business overseas. Now, that said, there are going to be some areas where a company is going to want to draw a bright line, where they're going to say, that may be the culture or the tradition, but because of our own corporate values and because we feel very strongly about those, we are not going to show flexibility when we're operating in different parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
One issue where that often comes up is around gender discrimination
mm-hmm.
or diversity issues,
mm-hmm.
racial discrimination, national origin discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the consideration companies have to take a look at. Which of our standards are we going to hold sacrosanct, and which can we get by with showing some flexibility in such a way that we don't harm our overall principle, but we're still honoring cultural differences?
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about how you began your professional career. I know that you did work with Procter & Gamble.
That's right. I was in product management for Procter & Gamble and found it was an excellent training ground, because I was in brand management, to learn the nuts and bolts of how business operates. Brand management oversees the operations of each of the individual P&G brands, and it's a great training ground for learning all aspects of business, from research and development to manufacturing to advertising and marketing.
Mm-hmm. And then isn't it interesting, too, how each generation views business from a very different perspective? And whereas before, many years back, everything was just done on a handshake, now in most companies, not all, but in most companies, it requires a lot of work towards making sure everybody's on the same page with contracts. But I got a chance to interview the CEO of Chick-fil-A. And he was talking about how when his father, Truett Cathy, started his business, it was done pretty much with a handshake and, you know, a back pocket relationship. And now he's moved it into this big, big corporation that goes across the country, and everything is done very differently. Do you also help Lori Tanzi Martins with how businesses move from one generational perspective to the next?
Yes, and it's interesting because I think in some ways businesses within the ethics and compliance sphere, I actually think we're moving backwards instead of forwards.
Really?
There has been, yes. While we're certainly setting standards, we've lost ethics, I think, oftentimes in our search for compliance. We're becoming more and more rule-driven. More and more everything has to be written down, as we were talking
mm-hmm.
about before.
Mm-hmm.
Very detailed policy procedures in every aspect of the business is a way of avoiding risk and a way of trying to avoid even potential litigation.
Mm-hmm.
But we've lost sight of the fact that in business, there are going to be situations that require judgment calls.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we train the next generation of leaders to not look at ticking the boxes, which is what can often happen, but look at the overarching ethical principles and ethical decision-making criteria that should come into play in some of these decisions. And, you know, if you look at the 2008 financial crisis and what we've been learning about that, I think that's an excellent example in that there are very few examples so far, I should mention, where people blatantly broke rules
mm-hmm.
or laws,
mm-hmm.
but yet what they did, their action and conduct clearly violated what most people would say was a proper, responsible, ethical approach to managing risk and to managing their own business.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think we run the risk of missing the forest for the trees. We're so focused on checking those boxes
mm-hmm.
that we forgot at the end of the day, it's really about inculcating principles and values in business leaders who are going to make the right decision that goes well beyond checking the box.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How much would you say relationships matter in that effort?
I think relationships are very important, and I think, though, what's really sent the field a bit in the wrong direction is the amount of regulation that has been coming out of Washington over the last 10 years. Business ethics was really just starting to emerge as a corporate function in the 90s, and then suddenly we had the rash of accounting scandals, which mm-hmm. led to the enactment of Sarbanes-Oxley, or SOX as it's known, which put a tremendous burden on companies with respect to various compliance. And it was interesting that before SOX, you would have people functioning in an ethics capacity in their company. They might come from a human resources background. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, they came from line management. People from sales and marketing or manufacturing might step into that role mm-hmm. as, you know, the wise senior elder in the firm that was responsible for ensuring the firm's commitment to ethics. Now you find, with the advent of SOX and then later Dodd-Frank, you find that people almost always, companies want a lawyer now.
Yeah.
And I think once you start putting legal people into that role that's entitled ethics,
mm-hmm.
you start veering towards a reliance on what does the law say,
right.
as opposed to looking at things from a principle or value standpoint.
And then that leads everybody in a different direction, doesn't it?
Correct. And then, as I said before, you risk losing the forest for the trees.
Ah, yes. Yeah. It's so hard to know sometimes where to go. And that's one of the values of having speakers like you come to speak with the OK Ethics organization. And then your topic is about overcoming cultural barriers. Cultural barriers to integrity, it helps us to think of things outside of our normal way of thinking.
Yes, that's exactly right. As we talked earlier, that's exactly right. Being able to look outside of your own cultural context to understand where the other person's coming from, mm-hmm. that doesn't mean in all cases that you, quote, do as the Romans do when in Rome,
right.
but it means understanding what are fundamental values for your organization versus where are areas where flexibility is entirely appropriate in mm-hmm. order to show respect for different cultural traditions and norms.
You know, when you think about family dynamics, just figuring out how to work in relationship with each other can be challenging, but to, you know, if you have a company that's going to be working with companies overseas, having somebody with your experience would be a huge advantage.
We can point people, we can tell them what are some of the right questions to ask and what they need to be aware of and what to be prepared for in terms of what they're going to encounter in various parts of the world. And knowing that going in can be a tremendous advantage for a company because they can prepare for it mm-hmm. and understand how they're going to handle those difficult situations with cultural sensitivity so that they're safeguarding their own company standards, but at the same time, not blowing the business opportunities that may present themselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Goodness. Well, you know, think about too, body language. What a shrug might mean in one culture has a totally different meaning in another. And moving forward into those opportunities with some advice, with some education, might really be a smart thing for businesses to do. So let's again tell our listeners how to reach you.
Right. We are available on the web at www.business-ethics.org, and they can reach us by phone at 202-296-6938. We are located in downtown Washington, D.C., and welcome visitors. If you let us know you're coming in advance, happy to take a few moments and talk to you about whatever issue your company might be dealing with.
And that number again is 202-296-6938. And Lori, everybody is, you know, a lot of people who are a part of OK Ethics are very interested in understanding how that might move into an international situation. So we're really looking forward to having you there.
Good. Well, as I said before, I'm really excited to come back to Oklahoma City.
Yeah, it will be hopefully beautiful weather on February 13th. And to remind our listeners again, the luncheon is at 11:30 at the Petroleum Club. And you can learn more about that by going to okethics.org and fill out the registration so that they'll have a seat for you there. We've been visiting with Lori Tansey Martins, and she is president of International Business Ethics Institute. It's good to have you, Lori.
Thanks so much, Shirley, and look forward to being in Oklahoma City in about a month.
This is Shirley Mears on 1640 AM. Join us again next time as we learn more about OK Ethics.